All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
Do you know what the problem is with you kids today? You guys think that all science fiction started in 1977 with Star Wars.
We put the picture's name on everything.
Oh, look, he's got a billion toys.
Baseball's the t-shirt.
What about movies like Forbidden Planet, The Day the Earth Stood Still, Solaris? What about Logan's Run?
Baseball's the lunchbox.
I have to possess this comic.
Baseball's the breakfast cereal.
I have a Mego Isis action figure.
Almighty Isis.
Baseball's the coloring book.
I say we stay here and fight it out.
Shut up, kid. You weren't even born when Star Wars came out.
You fuckers think that just because a guy reads comics he can't start some shit? I'll fucking take all you want!
It's Geek Stuff. Episode 4, The Revenge. This time, it's personal.
Is it?
Hopefully.
Hopefully?
It's already The Revenge, because, well, it's actually not the Revenge as we thought it might roll out, because originally, The Revenge was supposed to include Mr. Fantastic finally getting his own mic in case he wanted to chime in.
Right.
And the revenge here was that the mic that he got did not come with a proper cord.
Oh.
So he unfortunately is silent for another week. And you can tell he's really upset about it too.
Well, the world's going to just have to wait.
Not to mention the fact that, episode 5 or 6 could be the search for a new Mr. Fantastic.
Slow down, all right?
If he has the cancer of the brain, then, you know, we're going to need a new guy.
That ain't even right. Let's not kill him off yet, all right?
I don't want anybody with the dementia producing this show.
Could add a whole new element to the show.
It could add a whole, right.
Whole new level of crazy.
You know what? You and I could take some mind-expanding drugs and have the same kind of element.
Right.
So I think we better keep an eye on the medical condition of Mr. Fantastic.
All right, so if he starts to act crazy, just club him over the head and throw somebody else back
there.
You
know, the guys with the dementia, though, with the altered states and everything like that?
Yeah.
He could easily just pick up something and kill you.
He could. Throw a monitor at me.
Thus, taking his revenge on us.
Right.
For this bit.
Right.
So, I think we need to keep a closer eye on him.
So, mental note. Keep an eye on Mr. Fantastic.
Mental. Funny you put it that way.
Anyway, we'll start off with a new segment.
Let's
this
get
week.
Right into the news.
Yeah, we might as well. One of the bigger stories this week would be the launch of the Spider-Man 3 teaser website. Launch of the website, not that big a deal. They've done it for the other two movies.
And every other movie.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And it's, you know, not too much going on. But in this particular case, the image that pops up in the teaser website would be Spider-Man perched up against the wall, very dark lighting. And the question is it black costume Spider-Man or is it just bad lighting?
Bad lighting.
Okay. Now, why do you think that? I think it's very possible to be black costume.
Absolutely not.
Why not? It makes sense.
Because you can see. The versions of the picture that I have seen, mm-hmm. you can see that there's color to it. It's not just black. There's in the red sections of the costume, it's kind of that real kind of, it's almost black, yet there's, you know, it's got that hint of red, and the blue sections is black, but it's almost the hint of blue.
I admit it's got a color scale to it, but I don't know. It could be black costume. It makes sense. We've got Venom in this film. We know that, right? That's been confirmed time and time again.
Maybe it's a picture of Venom.
No. See, now that's being silly.
No, I think to assume that after two films that they're going to up and change the costume and just make it black because at one point Spider-Man had a black costume, I think it's silly for people to assume that. I think it's great that they're releasing this picture and that all. I mean, you couldn't draw more geek controversy than to change an element on a costume. Good God, look how insane people went, justifiedly so, how insane people went when the Superman costume was revealed.
Right.
well, how awful that is.
But at least this ties into the potential storyline of the movie. If you've got Venom as a character, which would be the host to the black costume, right? Eventually Eddie Brock taking on the black costume.
Well, you
Why
really,
couldn't Parker have the black costume?
You really are hoping that they're going to do the Venom storyline, that the black costume, for those of you that don't know, Spider-Man's black costume in the 1980s.
Secret Wars 1.
Yeah. Was actually an alien being that adapted to Peter Parker's body, pretty much had the same kind of
abilities
and powers. But he was able to, just, you know, kind of go away. Like, he didn't have to wear the Spider-Man suit, and didn't for a while. But of course, the symbiont being tried to take over Peter, and he had to remove himself from it, and blah, blah, blah. And when the symbiont being, which was the costume, found another person, you know, the symbiont tried to join with this person, who was Eddie Brock.
Right.
And Eddie Brock, of course, not such a great guy. And, you know, so the
personal
symbiote,
vendetta against Spider-Man.
Yeah. So it turned him into Venom, this badass black Spider-Man looking character. And so that's kind of how that goes. And you're really hoping that they're going to translate that storyline to film? You are a dreamer.
Now, see, if this was a couple years ago, pre-Ultimate Spider-Man, and I know you're not a fan of the Ultimate books, per se, but pre-Ultimate Spider-Man, how they handled the Venom story, I'd be with you. I'd agree with you 100%. But Ultimate Spider-Man tackled Venom, tackled the black costume, not one mention of an alien symbiote. It wasn't an alien symbiote. It was like a genetic bodysuit that was created in a lab to help study and cure diseases that took over Peter Parker's body, and then eventually the young Eddie Brock. And I, the young Eddie Brock, his build, his look, kind of has a feel similar to what Topher Grace looks like now, and what the character I'm assuming is going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
And why not? I think it makes sense to give it to Peter first,
okay,
and then have him reject it for Eddie Brock. You know, that's part of the Venom Spider-Man relationship, is that Peter Parker rejects the symbiote, and it needs to find a new host. And I think if you remove that element, you're changing the story, and you have to really create good.
Well, I hope that in some way they do justice to one of those storylines. However, it's not a black suit.
Okay. I'm just going along with all of the other geek talk on the internet.
It's an unlit Spider-Man, you know, in a dark, maybe it's a cloudy night. Maybe it's stormy, it's a little gray, and it's that's what I'm saying.
Okay. Well, we'll have to see. I mean, we're looking at next year before the film gets released, so I'm sure before then, though, long before then, we'll have some sort of confirmation either way.
Long before then, we'll know exactly how wrong you were.
Okay. Why don't you move on with your first little story bit?
Fine, I will. My story, it's not big, it's just a little thing about Superboy. In issue 6 of Infinite Crisis, mm-hmm, which is a DC cross-title book, which is kind of a big
deal
universe.
Right now.
Yeah, very big deal. Dealing with lots of issues, and well, I'll get into that. Superboy was killed in issue 6 of Infinite Crisis this week. Now, this is significant in that, you know, Superboy is a significant character in the DC universe, and has been for a while.
Right.
He's a clone of Superman and Lex Luthor.
Correct, I believe.
And he was killed. And the bigger story here is that, unbeknownst to me, there has been a legal battle going on for, 60 years?
Oh, I think I heard something about this.
About who owns Superboy, who created Superboy. And the original creators of Superman were Siegel and Shuster.
Okay.
And sometime after that, Siegel then pitched for this new character, Superboy, which was basically talking about the young Clark Kent.
Okay.
So to say that, because at this point there was no established canon as to when he became Superman.
Okay.
You're talking like the 40s here.
Sure, sure. Action Comics.
So that what they wanted to say was that, you know, that he was Superboy and, you know, had some adventures as Superboy.
Okay.
And they said that this was a different character, and but it really isn't. And it's kind of a very complicated lawsuit, but what happens is in 2004, I think it was, 2004, Siegel's relatives, Siegel's heir, I think his widow and his daughter,
okay,
sued Time Warner, alleging that the TV show Smallville infringed on the rights. They had won back in 2002,
mm-hmm,
I think, somewhere around there. They had actually got the rights to Superboy back.
Okay.
In 2004, they sued Time Warner saying that Smallville,
mm-hmm,
is actually Superboy.
Superboy. Okay.
And so there's a big legal issue going on. And apparently, this thing is moving forward, and it doesn't look very good for Time Warner. So right, if you're a fan of the Smallville TV show, you might be enjoying some of the last episodes if it doesn't go the Siegel's way, I suppose. I don't know. I just thought I think it's very interesting that a court case or where this kind of thing is going on 60 years later. And apparently everybody's involved. Neil Adams is one of the biggest legends in the industry, is apparently very involved and has been involved with the case and with the ownership issue for a long time. I don't know. It's something interesting. People might want to check out more. I'm sure if you Google Superboy,
right,
and Siegel and Neil Adams, and I'm sure you'll find more information.
Right. Anything else going on comic book wise?
Well, Mr. Fantastic brought the latest issue of Rolling Stone to,
ooh,
our attention.
Contributor.
Yes, the April 20th issue that has just a tiny little blurb, which I just wanted to comment on page 31. It says, okay, graphic violence. It talks about something that we have been talking about.
Okay.
Which is the huge crossover books from DC and Marvel. And specifically, what interests us here is, right, that we finally get a better idea as to what the whole Marvel Civil War is about.
Oh, geez. Civil War again?
Yeah. Well, here it is. Marvel's upcoming Civil War miniseries starts with a massive national tragedy that leads the government to rule that superheroes are weapons of mass destruction.
Oh, God. I don't even know what to say. It's rendered me speechless.
Captain America, Fantastic Four, and so on are forced to register with the authorities or become outlaws. Now, what do they have to do they have to register who they are? Their secret identities? Yeah.
They have to register their powers. Powers?
Do they? Do?
I'm guessing. That book's been done already. It's actually called Powers.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wow, I forgot about that.
Well,
anyway, apparently, from what I understand, Iron Man is leading the, yeah, register, so, side. And Captain America is leading the, are you crazy, side. So, I guess therein lies the war.
Oh, all right. So, it's not just going to be government versus superhero. It's going to be superhero versus superhero.
Apparently.
And who's on whose side.
Well, thus, the Civil War, you see,
right,
because the factions are both.
Right. Which side has the slaves?
The other. Which side has the slaves? Of course, you'd bring that up.
Just saying.
You're going to wonder, next year, wonder out loud, which side's going to wear the white hoods after the Civil War is over.
Hey, I didn't push it that far.
Right. You'll start reading those books, won't you, Matt? And DC is, of course, with their Infinite Crisis, is again more about, is all about the paranoia that goes on, that's going on in our current world, a post 9/11 world, as they say.
Okay.
With the superheroes spying on each other and being, you know, generally frayed.
Ugh.
And they also mentioned Frank Miller's upcoming Batman book, which Batman will take on Al Qaeda.
You know, I like Frank Miller, but I don't know how to feel about that.
Now, see, now they quote Kevin Smith in here. Kevin says, back in World War II, mm-hmm. they had comics with superheroes fighting against Nazis. Captain America was created to fight Hitler.
Sure.
To fight Nazis. So, I mean, does it stand to reason that some characters that are around now might be taking on the issues of today? I say, why not?
I don't know. It's got to be done really well, I think.
And I think it's only fair to mention again the fantastic V for Vendetta movie, right. which started out as a comic, which came out in the 80s, which was Alan Moore's dissatisfaction with Margaret Thatcher's England.
Right.
So there's a, you know, there's, it's relative.
Okay.
You know, there's some relative material going. I mean, I don't know. Civil War is just kind of capitalizing on the whole weapons of mass destruction thing.
Sure. Catchphrase of the day.
I think maybe DC, at least the perspective that they're giving in this article, mm-hmm. is much better than the actual book, I think is, I think needs to be said here.
Right.
Because the perspective that they're paranoid and they're spying on each other is great, but that's not really what Infinite Crisis is about.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't read it,
that's what Identity Crisis was about, okay. which was the book that precedes this somewhat.
Right.
The whole Infinite Crisis is a bit more complicated than that.
All right, so since the topic of this week's show really is This Time It's Personal, I know you're going to take interest in this story, because it has to deal with one of your favorite writers in Marvel history.
Ooh, who?
Chris Claremont.
Ugh.
Yeah. Anyway, Chris Claremont right now, he's a sick little boy.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, he's suffering some cardiac stress after being in a conference in Italy for a couple of weeks.
Really?
And yeah, it looks that way. And it looks like he's putting all of his books on hold until later this summer.
Oh, what a damn shame.
I knew you'd be upset.
Oh, I am devastated. What does it say what the chances are that he might die?
It doesn't. You want to speculate now for us?
No, I don't. I mean, I can hope, but I don't think I'd want to go as far as to speculate. He, you know, let me just say this about Chris Claremont so we can move on.
Okay.
Everyone thinks that he is this amazing writer and he did all the classic issues of the X-Men. You know what? He did do some fantastic storylines in X-Men back in the day.
I agree.
But what everyone fails to remember is that he also wrote a lot of the shit that happened in the 80s. And when they finally got him to give up writing the X-Men, he went and he wrote other projects like... you know what? To list them all would be just dumbfounding for me. I'm just going to list one. Sovereign 7, which was a pale clone of the X-Men that was just awful. This is a guy who in the 80s would write himself into a corner.
Mm-hmm.
And then, uh-oh, I'm going to have to pull a character from the future to solve my problems. Uh-oh, I'm going to have to pull this guy from the future. Uh-oh, time travel, ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. Ass.
Well, he's sick. And
well, hey, Chris.
And all of his little books
are
on hold.
Chris, if you're listening to this, and I know you aren't, I hope you get better. In all seriousness, I hope you get better real soon and retire.
Wow. All right.
You're done. Retire. Give it up.
Eek.
You and that freak Byrne. We'll talk about that next week.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've heard some stuff about him. All right, we got two more quick points I just wanted to hit upon.
Okay.
It looks like there's some more buzz surrounding Hellboy 2 again, which is...
Yes!
I know you're excited being a huge Hellboy fan.
Huge.
And like we've heard about in the past, it looks like it's some original stuff written by Mignola specifically for the movie.
Oh, really? They're not going to go ahead and do one of the other books?
I don't think so. I think it's all original. I think the working title right now is Versus the Golden Army or something along those lines.
Ooh.
And it recently came out, I think, either today or yesterday, that Abe Sapien would have a big bit to do in the second movie, which is great because he's one of my favorite characters
from
the book.
He is. He's really cool. Okay, that's exciting.
And the last bit, which I also know you're going to be excited about, has to do with Fantastic Four 2. Yeah, well. Well, you know, just, you know, we heard with its July 07 release and the return of all the original cast, you know.
Wait.
Even batter dipped.
Oh, no. Wait. All the original cast?
All the original cast.
That means Doom is coming back.
Yes, he was contracted to do the second film, and he will be back.
Why, God, why?
I, you know what? There's speculation that there's going to be another villain thrown in there as well. Who that is, I have no guess. I've heard some crazy things in the past, like Galactus, but I couldn't even fathom.
Right.
Yeah, all right, exactly. I couldn't even fathom that as being a possibility.
And the Sentinels will be 20 stories tall in the new X-Men movie.
Actually, no, they're going to be 3 feet tall, but we'll save that for another day.
Oh, my God. Don't even get me started.
I know. But anyway.
Great. So I think the bottom line of this story is that there's going to be a Fantastic Four, too. Ugh.
Exactly. And I don't even know what to say, so we'll just leave it at that.
God,
for now.
This is such an up and down news segment. I don't know how to feel.
Yeah,
I'm keeping my anger on out of that last one for the next segment.
You should feel like Chris Claremont. A little stressed.
A little cardiac sick. Stressed?
Little bit.
God, I sure hope his heart doesn't explode out of his chest. That would suck, huh? Just saying.
Are we going to talk about G.I. Joe now?
Hey Kev, we're not here doing geek stuff. I'm busy writing for my website, collectiblebitsbox.com, where you can find all sorts of news and reviews on all your favorite toys and
Matt.
What?
Oh, come on, man. I know that you want to promote your site, collectiblebitsbox.com, with its in-depth reviews and articles and fun facts, but this is the...
We also have a MySpace page.
Stop with the fucking self-promotion!
I'm sorry.
CollectibleBitsBox.com.
Shut up!
I cannot take this anymore. Saying everything I said before. All these words, they make no sense. I found this.
Still doing it wrong. You're ruthless.
Still doing it wrong.
You're ruthless.
All I want is the countdown done properly when we're coming back from a break.
You take it out personal on you.
You know,
I'm glad I'm on this side of the studio.
Five fingers, and you say five, and then you show four fingers, say four, and then you just put up three fingers and don't say anything, two fingers and don't say anything, one finger and don't say anything, and then you throw it, like a fishing line, like a river runs through it. You just, of course you didn't see it.
Anyway.
You didn't, you cultureless boob.
Wow.
That's right. It's personal. Yeah. Episode 4, this time it's personal. All right.
Anyway,
I've saved
along.
My heat.
Okay.
Because we have promised, and we've been getting a lot of email.
We have.
About when we're going to talk about variants, exclusives, chase figures. Ugh. What are they? What aren't they? And why are they? Okay, so here's how we're going to start this. Because this is the easiest and calmest way to start this off.
Okay.
We are going to lay down the definitions.
All right.
As we perceive them. Now, the industry may perceive them differently. Companies may perceive them differently.
And I'm sure they do.
And we know that they do because we've been told as much. But we are going to lay them down as we understand them, as we label them.
Right.
These terms are going to appear on the glossary on the home site, which Mr. Fantastic has promised me will be up with episode 4.
Okay.
And, of course, the home site, www.bigkevsgeekstuff.com.
Right.
Okay. Let's get into it. For those of you that aren't ardent toy collectors, here's an education for you. Toys are not perfect.
Sure.
And what happens from time to time is that you will get a toy in the middle of a production. The company, the producing company, will find a flaw in the toy.
Right.
And they will correct the toy while it's still in production. And what this leads to is production variance. Now, before we get into it, we're going to take this nice and slow.
Okay.
This becomes very desirable. This sort of mistake, shall we say, becomes very desirable to ardent collectors, very fanatic collectors, because these guys, completists, we'll call them.
Right.
Completists on the glossary, on the home site. A completist is a person who must get every single piece in a given line.
Okay.
Okay. Every single piece, including any sort of variant pieces that might have been produced. Now,
oh, right.
Now, where are we going with this? This has happened since toys were created.
Sure.
But no one cared.
Right.
It's a little flaw. They correct the flaw. I mean, 9 times out of 10, you know, in the 50s and 60s, probably nobody noticed.
Right.
Until you start looking for them. Mm-hmm. Until collectors started looking for them. Until retailers, and particularly we're talking here about secondary market dealers, started saying, well, look, they only made so many of these because of this production error. It's much more rare and thus worth more money.
Right.
Now what happens is you see company executives who are investigating, who are exploring the secondary market to see how their products are selling to collectors.
Sure.
Are starting to notice around this time, wow, look, people are paying $200 for this silly little production error.
Right.
Like, we didn't even catch this.
Right.
The collectors caught this. We didn't even know. You know, they're being produced over in Hong Kong. Uh-huh. And Xinhua is doing
packaging,
quality control. And says, uh-oh.
Inspector number 9.
Little mistake. Inspector number 9. is there's a little mistake. They go back. They tweak a little machine or something. No more mistake.
Right.
That's it. But they've already produced 500 pieces with the mistake. Now you have industry executives, guys who are checking out the collector's market, maybe for the first time, maybe very early on when they decided the collector's market was worth investigating, start seeing, wow, these guys are really into these mistakes that we make. Well, what if we made these mistakes on purpose?
Right.
And what if we let them know we were going to be making, not mistakes now, but alternate choices, alternate pieces for the collector to entice the collector to be interested in the line.
Right.
It's dirty pool.
It is dirty pool.
Okay. So let's start at the beginning.
Okay.
Here's,
define some of these.
Here is the geek stuff way here, the geek stuff layout of how this stuff goes.
Right.
Where did this begin? This begins with production variance.
Correct.
Okay. A production variant, as we are labeling it and understanding it, is a variant that was unintentionally produced, a flaw, an altered piece, or altered accessory. This would be an unintentional thing that happened.
All right.
And the example that we've listed here is the early 90s Star Wars figures.
Right.
Okay. And the one that we're specifically going to concentrate on, because there are a bunch, let's concentrate on Ben Kenobi.
Okay. How many of theirs? There was
Power of the Force.
Small handful of those?
I think we came up with five.
Five,
but
right?
Let's hold off. Let's,
okay.
Because this only qualifies really as one.
Okay.
Okay. So when they first put out Ben Kenobi, Power of the Force, in what we refer to as the modern Star Wars line, as opposed to the classics line, which came out when the movies came out, this would be the modern line.
Right. Early 90s, red card.
Right. When they first put this figure out, he came with a saber that was too long.
Right.
The saber was some, let's say, 3 inches long. Right.
Okay.
Of course, when they got their feedback from the lunatic Star Wars fans, the first thing they said was the saber's too long.
Right.
Now these are very these are like the very first pieces that they're showing to maybe fan club people or potential people who would have something to say. The right. saber's too long. Well, they've already produced
God knows how many.
2,000 units with a saber too long. A 3-inch saber.
Right.
So right away, they go back to Hong Kong and they say, Fring Wah, we need to correct this saber, make it 2.5 inches long.
Right. So you've got long saber Kenobi now.
So now you have floating out there, you have Ben Kenobi with a long saber, let's say 3 inches.
Right.
Now they've made the correction.
Right.
The correction is
shorter saber.
2.5 inch saber.
Right.
They've taken it down 0.5 inch.
But okay.
That is a production variant. The long saber becomes the production variant.
Right.
Because it was a mistake and they corrected the mistake.
Right. And the key to this, which we discussed and you're going to hear us refer to it a couple more times during this discussion, is that it was unintentional.
Unintentional. Right. So let's move on from there. Because I think the next one we're discussing would be the package variant.
Okay.
Okay. We are defining package variant as the same figure with different packaging. And by different packaging, we mean the artwork, the photos, or other packaging elements are changed from the original packaging that has come out. So again, this is something that is not necessarily intentional, but it is something that it may be done later in a production run of a figure. Okay, so let's go back to Star Wars in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to Ben Kenobi.
Okay.
Okay. Now we have Ben has come out now with a short saber.
Right.
Okay. There is two packaging variants. Number one is they obviously intended for to keep producing 3-inch sabers, because what they did was the tray is what the figure sits in inside the blister pack.
Right.
You know when you open up a figure, everything is nicely laid out in a little tray. The tray that was produced for Ben Kenobi had a 3-inch
groove for the 3-inch saber.
For the 3-inch saber, which now contained, because they corrected the saber, now that 3-inch groove contained a 2.5-inch saber.
Right.
Which creates variant number two.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Kenobi, short saber, long saber tray.
Right.
And of course, rabid Star Wars fans or Hasbro executives found out someone selling long saber trays.
Right.
As a variant. So what happens? They correct it.
Right.
And apparently, there's a second one here as well, where the picture on the back, and someone will email me if I'm wrong about this, but the picture on the back of Ben Kenobi also changes here from a full body shot to a close-up shot.
Okay.
So now you have which brings us to five, because you had the long saber.
One.
You had the corrected saber, but in a long tray.
Two.
With the full body shot. You had the corrected saber with the long tray with the close-up shot. I believe that's where that took place. You have the corrected saber, the corrected tray with the long body shot.
Four.
And the corrected saber, corrected tray with the close-up picture on the packaging.
Five.
Which I think is five. Now, I may be wrong about that. If I am, please don't hesitate to drop us a line. Go right to Big Kev's geekstuff.com and drop us a line and let us know where we went wrong on that. So that is an unintentional production error that was corrected, a packaging error or a packaging variant that was not necessarily intentional, but what they did was went back and neatened things up.
Right.
Once they, you know, once they didn't need a 3-inch saber gouge or tray anymore, they cleaned that up. And that's what those two are. But let's move on.
Okay.
We also have a paint variant.
Ah.
Paint variant is a figure that is already that has already been produced.
Right.
And out there. And a company will now decide to go back, take that figure, and generally speaking, not change any of the sculpting elements to it. In other words, not put a new head, not put new hands or accessories. About 99 times out of 100, that's right. The way this goes. And but what they do is they repaint the character in a new color scheme.
Right.
And we have down here on here is the Spawn series from McFarlane.
Right.
Who is notorious for paint variants.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that comes to mind for me is the Mandarin Spawn.
Right.
Which I think is one of their best, probably their best sculpted piece ever.
What are there, 5 of those now?
If you count all of the ones, if you count including the large ones.
Right.
There was a couple of 18-inch ones as well. To my knowledge, I think there's 6.
3, 4. Yeah, I believe you're right. I think there was.
Of that one. Now, they've done Mandarin Spawn again. Now, I'm not talking about the new Mandarin Spawn because they just redid him, I think, recently. Although I don't have him. They just redid the figure again recently.
Okay.
I think. I'm not talking about him. I'm talking about the original Mandarin Spawn. I don't know the line number.
I believe there were 2 of the 18-inch paint variants.
Right.
And then there were 3 of the regular, I think, what are they, a 10-inch line?
No, they're like 6.
6-inch line? Yeah. Oh, were they 6-inch line?
Yeah.
3 of the 6-inch. There was one that was regular retail. There was a, like a Collector's Club exclusive, which I think was like the black one, right?
Right.
Well, and then there was a paint variant also.
Now don't get too far.
Oh,
ahead.
Sorry.
You're starting to blur the lines.
Okay, sorry. Okay?
Because you're right, and we're going to get to why you're right in a minute.
I'll give another example.
But what we're saying is, so technically, if those are the 5 that you're laying out, 4 of them would be considered paint variants. Because they were available to the mass market.
Right.
4 of them.
Okay.
There is a 5th one, but that's getting ahead. You're getting one step ahead of us. We have to do one more variant before we move on.
Okay.
Okay, one more type of variant, but we won't forget the Mandarin Spawn, the 5th Mandarin Spawn. We'll come back to him in a minute.
Okay.
The other one we listed here is just your general... what we're referring to and what will appear on our glossary as the intentional variant. And we have that as small aspects of the figure are altered to give the line variety, but are not produced in varying quantities.
Okay.
So in other words, and the example we have here is pretty much at this day and age, anything that comes from Mezco.
Right.
Any action figure line that comes from Mezco.
Most notably, probably would be Hellboy,
and where it started,
right? And Family Guy.
Now, people went berserk when the Hellboy movie line came out,
right?
Because the figures were all they were saying. There's a million variants on the figures, and so it was perceived at the time that some of them were harder to come by than others.
Not the case,
but that wasn't the case. Apparently. They were shipped in equal quantities.
In that case, or in that situation, where the harder to find figures came from was customer driven.
Right.
There were
and
one
we should
or
say,
two.
And we should say that the variant here was in, were 2 aspects in the Hellboy case.
Mm-hmm.
There was either no expression Hellboy.
Right.
Or grinning Hellboy with his teeth clenched, or yelling Hellboy with his teeth unclenched. So there were three head variants, and there were two other variants. Don't forget, there was open right hand of doom,
right,
and closed right hand of doom,
right.
And what they did was, of these five different elements, they varied them up amongst all the different, what were there, three or four different Hellboy figures. They varied them up amongst all the different Hellboy figures. Mm-hmm. So you, let's say you had regular, let's just call him, for argument's sake, because I don't know what he's officially called, let's call him regular Hellboy. So you had regular Hellboy, expressionless face, closed fist.
Right.
Then you had regular Hellboy, gritting teeth, closed fist.
Right.
Then you had regular Hellboy, yelling face, closed fist. Then you had regular Hellboy, open, no expression,
open fist. Etc.
Then you had regular, and on for three, for two more, whatever it was. And there was a perception here that Mezco had produced these in varying quantities, but my understanding is that they were produced by and large in equal quality quantities.
Right.
So then they took that real interest that was gained from doing that in Hellboy, and they transferred it to
Family Guy.
Right.
Now, with Family Guy, it was a little different. The figures most notably for Family Guy that would be the variants would be Peter and Stewie.
From
Series 1.
From Series 1. They've done it in every series, I think.
I think they've done variants, but Series 1 was the worst one.
Right.
For Peter, it was his eyes. I think there was something like six or seven different eyes, eye changes, you know, looking to the left, looking to the right, eyes closed, eyes wide open, one eye closed, something like that. With those figures, they were, I believe, randomly inserted within a case.
Right.
So you didn't know what you would get when you would crack the case.
Right.
There was no one that was produced more than the other, but it was random as to which one you might get when you would crack a case. So that there's the difference there with the Family Guy line.
Right. So that's what we're referring to as intentional variants. And I think Mezco really pioneered this.
Mm-hmm.
Just to give the line variety.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is fine. I mean, does it sometimes, you know, when it initially starts, does it make it a little bit more difficult to find, you know, the one that you want? You know, if you wanted gritting teeth, closed fist, Hellboy, does it make it a tiny bit more difficult? It does, but it's good to know that you have options.
Right.
Which is a nice thing. And them being produced in equal quantities means that while it may be, you know, it may be a little difficult to find the particular one you want, you know, by and large, you're going to find it.
Right.
Right. So let's move on.
Okay. That would take care of variants.
That takes care of variants, as we have defined variants in four ways. That's all we're going to say about variants, because those are the variants.
Okay.
Now we're going to move on to exclusives.
Okay.
And we define exclusives as an altered or an entirely new figure produced specifically for a single retailer, fan club, event, etc.
Okay.
Okay. And there's a million examples here.
Sure.
And most notably, what we need to say here is that exclusives are labeled as such, whether it's an entire package element, says on the you know, they've produced a card, the backing card specifically for the San Diego Comic-Con,
right,
or specifically for blahblahblah.com, or wherever it is specifically noted, it is specifically noted on the character or on the toy that this is an exclusive for that company.
Correct.
In our definition, it must say that.
Correct.
These are not necessarily created for the mass market, though there have been some mm-hmm. that were created for the mass mm-hmm. market. There are a number of Target exclusives that are Star Wars pieces that are clearly labeled as Target exclusives. They have a Target symbol on the packaging.
Right.
that somebody have a Target, you know, whatever it is, they're specifically labeled and they're specifically created for a specific retailer chain. But by and large, when we say exclusives, we're talking about convention exclusives, fan club exclusives, mm-hmm. things created for collectors by the companies. And this is not necessarily a bad thing, because you expect that if they're able to produce something that we, the fan, the collector, might want in quantities enough to satisfy us, where they don't think they would make any money in the mass market, we should be thankful that they're doing that.
And generally speaking, the exclusives for events and for like fan clubs and magazines and stuff like that, while again, it's limited to that event, the price point on them is not what you would find at a secondhand store. It's reasonable price point for the initial purchase. Now, where it goes from there is
right.
is anybody's guess, right. but normally like a $20 price tag for an exclusive, which is pretty reasonable for an exclusive. That's what we're looking at.
San Diego Comic-Con is probably the biggest producer of these exclusives.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't, there isn't a single company that doesn't go to San Diego with a San Diego Comic-Con event convention exclusive. There isn't a company that I can think of. And there are some of these pieces produced for that convention
mm-hmm.
that are legendary,
mm-hmm.
that are very popular. I remember the story, although I wasn't witness to it, the story of the first Mattel con exclusive at San Diego was, well, like 3 or 4 years ago. It was a He-Man exclusive. It was the first one that they did. And there was mob scenes. There was somebody got hurt because people were trampling over people to get this exclusive figure and so on and so forth. Now, of course, they have a very strict lottery system in place, mm-hmm. where you have to get tickets and then maybe you'll get one and maybe you won't. And last year, they upped the ante considerably with the Batman Catwoman figure that they released with 5 variants.
Right.
So the exclusive can have variants of its own.
And they were blind boxed, too, weren't they?
Blind boxed, too, which is... blind boxed, which will appear on the glossary, is what you find when it is not revealed to you what you will be getting inside the box until you purchase it and open the box.
Okay.
Okay. So, Matt.
Uh huh.
We're almost through the definitions, but
we have the granddaddy still.
I think we need a little break. So let's take a little break.
Okay.
And then we're going to get into the chase figures.
Oh, God.
We're going to get into those right after this.
You guys like Snake Eyes?
Hey, Kev. I just got a new bag of Cadbury Mini Eggs, my favorite Easter candy. They're solid milk chocolate eggs with a crisp sugar shell. Check out these ingredients, all of which I'm going to read for you right now. Milk chocolate, sugar, milk, cocoa butter, chocolate lactose, soy lecithin, PGPR, emulsifiers, artificial and natural flavors, sugar, contains 2% less cornstarch, gum acacia, artificial colors, yellow 5, blue 2. Red 40, yellow 6, lake, and blue 2 lake, and ethyl vanillin, artificial flavors. Cadbury Mini Eggs.
Available for a limited time.
Available at a store near you.
Worst commercial gimmick ever.